This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Right, Parshas Bo. I've got a few things, a few interesting things on this week's Parsha, but I just want to start with a ha'ara, a short observation that someone emailed me following up last week's shir. Last week's shir, I hope you remember, I mentioned, we went through some of the pshatim and orov in wild animals, what exactly were they? And I mentioned one pshat of the Rabbeinu Bachai. The Rabbeinu Bachai says that it's interesting that of all the makas, the only one that has a hey hayadia is he orov, is orov. It doesn't say hadom or hatzfadeya. It's dafka dam tzfadeya. But when it comes to orov, the Torah calls it he orov. Why? So the Rabbeinu Bachai explains, as I said last week, that this was not a new creation. This were animals that existed already, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu just brought them to this place. So someone emailed me and said, well, hang on a second, what about Arbe? In this week's parsha, we have the last three of the Esemachas of the 10 plagues. Number 8 is Arbe, and that's not a new creation, they're locusts. So why doesn't that get a hay? Because they surely exist, and it's not a new Bria, HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Barod. It's a new creation of fire, water mixed together. Dam is a new phenomenon. All the rivers, you know, turn to blood. But isn't Arbe in the same category as Orov? Good question. So my response to this gentleman was that perhaps Arbe were qualitatively different because the Pasuk itself says, Lohoya ken Arbe kamoyo va'achrov lo yekein. And Rashi explains exactly the details of that, but it means that qualitatively they were different to any Orav previously or post. And therefore, to that extent, perhaps they were considered like a new Bria, different to anything happened before or after. And perhaps that explains how the Rabbeinu Bachai would deal with that particular problem. Okay, let's move on. The first Ha'ara again deals with the Makkah of Arbe. For those listening online, please email me at j.golker@gmail.com and I'll happily send you the handouts. The Pasuk says, let's look at the first box. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Natei Yodcha al Eretz Mitzrayim. Stretch out your hand on Mitzrayim, Vaya'al al Eretz Mitzrayim. The Arbe will descend upon the land of Egypt. Vayochal es kol esef ha'aretz, and it will consume all the grass of the land. Es kol asher hishe ha'borod, whatever the borod, i.e. the previous makkah, has left over. And indeed, that's what happens. Vayetz Moshe es Mateo al Eretz Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu stretches out his hand, and the Arbe descends, they come on all the land of Egypt. Next Pasuk, there's so many Arbe, it becomes dark. They eat, they consume all the grass of the land. And they eat all the fruit of the tree which the Borod have left over. So I heard an amazing insight in the name of Rav David Cohen. Rav David Cohen is one of the Rosh Hashiva of Chevron in Yerushalayim, one of the great Rosh Hashivas of our time. And he makes a very interesting observation. If you note that the Arbe that didn't follow the instructions, because what were the instructions? The instructions, Hashem says to Moshe and Pasuk Yud Beis, that they should eat kol esef ha'aretz. They should eat all the grass of the land, whatever the Borod left over. But yet, if you look at Pasuk Tesvov, they went even further. And they also ate all the fruit of the tree. Why did they go over? So there's a famous Maharal. The Maharal says that there is a correlation between the Eser Ma'amoros, with which the world was created, the 10 utterances with which the world was created, and the 10 makas. There's correspondence. Let's take a look at this Maharal. V'oid yesh l'chol adat, says the Maharal in Gvuras Hashem Perek Nun Zayin. Next box. Ki kasha hevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu al HaMitzrim HaMakas, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the makas on the Mitzrim, hike oisam b'chol chelke ha'olam. He hit them with every aspect of the world. V'chelke ha'olam heim asorah. There are 10 aspects, divisions of the world. V'heim asorah chalokim shebar HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'shesh yimei b'reishis. And these are the 10 divisions of the world which Hashem created in the Sheshes Mei Bereishis. But l'chol chelek echod mayma echod b'fnei atzma. Each chelek, each division, each aspect of the world has a different mayma, different utterance with which it was created. Now, and then the Maharal goes through and explains how each makkah corresponds to each one of the Asura Mamoras. When it comes to Arba, which one does that correspond to? Which utterance in the beginning, in the first chapter of Bereishis, which utterance does it correspond to? Says the Maharal, Arba neged toitse ha'oretz eitz oisepri. That maimer, that instruction, that utterance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to create the trees corresponds to Arba. Why? Ki ha'arba hazeh hu hashchoso b'maimer hazeh. Because the Arba was the destruction. It's the undoing of this act of creation of the trees, the vegetation. Dafka ki ha'arba yoyse miyuchud mikol sha'atuloyim. Because Arba are more able than all other worms and insects. Shehu mashchis ha'pri that can destroy a pri. As it says in the Teichoch in Parshat Kisovo, zera rav tvitzi ha'sodeh, that you'll sow lots of produce, u'ma'at te'osef, but you'll collect in very little. Ki ha'chselenu ha'arba, because the Arba will consume it. So you see, the Arba is the sort of the prototype of that which can destroy all the produce of the field. Okay, so says the Maharal, there are the correlation between the 10 plagues and the 10 utterances of creation. Now, if we go back to that particular maima, that particular act, utterance of creation, let's take a closer look. Vayomer Elokim tadshe ha'aretz desha esev mazriya zera. Eitz pri oise pri leminoi. When Hashem created the world, in Posuk Yud Aleph of Perek Aleph of Bereishis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Tad she ha'aretz desha esev, that let the earth sprout vegetation, mazria zera, yielding herbs, eitz pri, fruit trees, oise pri leminoi, producing fruit according to its kind. Now, there's a famous Rashi. Rashi on this Posuk says, that the tree didn't listen to Hashem. Because what did Hashem say? Hashem said, eitz pri and oise pri leminoi. As Rashi explains, shehe tam ho'eitz katama pri. What was meant to happen is that the tree itself should taste like the fruit. Not that you just pick off an apple and eat the apple and it tastes like an apple, but you pull off a branch of an apple tree where you bite into the trunk and it tastes like an apple. Vehi lo yosas akein. But says Rashi on that pasuk, the tree didn't do that. But rather the land produced a tree which is oisepri, which makes fruit, but not that the tree itself is fruit. Therefore the earth was punished as well, because it didn't produce a tree which itself tastes like a fruit, but it just produced a tree which produces fruit. Okay. You see, therefore, that when it came to the Maima, the creation of trees, instructions weren't followed properly. Therefore, says Rav David Cohen, when the Maima, the Makkah, which is counted, that Maima of Tadshe Ha'aretz, it's going to correspond exactly. And it's also not going to follow instructions properly. And therefore, when the locusts came, although they were told the Yoicheles called Esef Ha'aretz, they didn't listen to instructions and they went further. They destroyed not just the grass, but they destroyed the fruit of the tree as well, beyond the instructions that they were given. So it's an amazing insight, fabulous insight. In other words, just like the Asura Mamoras, there is a correlation of the 10 Makkas and the 10 Mamoras with which the world was created. Well, is actually much more exact than we realized. Because in the Maima, where the HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the land to produce trees, they were meant to produce trees which could be edible in addition to the fruit, but they didn't listen to instructions. Well, therefore, the Makkah that comes to undo that Maima, also instructions weren't followed. And the Arba, the locust, consumed not just the Esef Aretz, but also the Eitz, the Priho Eitz Asher Hoseh Abaretz. Fabulous insight. Okay, let's move on. The next makkah is that of choshech, of darkness. I saw a very interesting point in the writings of my dear colleague, Rabbi Daniel Fine, and he quoted Reb Lippe Rabinowitz. Reb Lippe Rabinowitz, I'm sure many of you know him. He is the well-known, he was formerly of Manchester, the Manal of the Masifta of Manchester Grammar, now residing in Yerushalayim. And he quotes some very interesting points he makes on the Makkah of Choshech. We mentioned last week, which is the worst Makkah? Interesting table conversation. Which one do you fear the most? Now, people sometimes are scared of the dark, but is darkness that terrible? When you look at it compared to Dam and Sfadeya and all the other, you know, the Orav we discussed last week. But Choshech, is it that bad? You know, here in London, not in recent years, Baruch Hashem, but, you know, during the war years and after that, London had, and really since the Industrial Revolution, it had very heavy fogs. In fact, I remember, you know, the every Motzei Sukkos, my father would, Zechrin Rach would make Havdalah, and he would always have the same line. He would always say, we'd wish us, you know, a gitten winter, and zol nish zayin ken fogus. There shouldn't be heavy fogs, because when he was growing up, there were very thick fogs, pea soup as they were called, that you couldn't see in front of you. We don't see it, Baruch Hashem, nowadays. So is darkness really that bad? Yes, Rashi says that Loyomish, that it was almost tangible for the last 3 days, etc. But what exactly was the Makkah of Choshech? So Reb Lipa Rabinowitz makes a very interesting point. We know that when archaeologists, they dig and they find riches buried in the Egyptian tombs that were buried. Why did the Egyptians bury their material wealth, their gold, their silver, their precious items? Why did they bury them with them? The answer is that ancient Egypt measured worth by material possessions. It sounds, it has a little bit of a resonance to today. But Egyptians, that's certainly how they lived. They measured a person's worth, that horrible phrase, what's he worth? What a terrible phrase, as if a person's bank account has any bearing on who the person is. But that's what ancient Egypt, that's how they lived. And therefore, during the plague of Choshech, a person was totally disconnected and detached from his material possessions. And a person who lives a very materialistic lifestyle and is identified with his material possessions by his wealth, his gold, his silver, etc., etc., when that person is alone, disconnected from his material wealth, that is very, very unsettling, and that's a form of torture. You know, there's a Rabbi Tversky, right? Abraham Tversky, one of the great personalities in the Jewish world today, should live and be well. He's written, I think, 80 books, something, you know, a vast amount of books. In one of the very early books, I think it's called Life's Too Short, in the introduction, I remember he made a very, very interesting comment. He said that when he was a man in his mid to late 30s, he was the director of a big psychiatric department of a hospital, which serviced an area of 3 million people. And he was run off his feet. He was exhausted and he needed a vacation. And he went to a hot spa in somewhere in America. And he said it was heaven on this earth. He was disconnected. His phone didn't have a phone. This is in the 1960s. And he said it was just Gan Eden. And he went into this spa for a few days for some treatment. And also he had back problems. Anyway, he went into the spa and he sat in the spa or jacuzzi or something. And he said it was Gan Eden. And after 7 or 8 minutes, he decided to come out. And the attendant said, no, the treatment is you've got to be in this spa for 25 minutes. And he had to go back. Otherwise, you couldn't go on to the next stage of the whatever the procedure was. And he sat there and after a while, he just couldn't bear it anymore. He was just sitting there, there's nothing to do. And he said he realized that many times we just can't bear our own company. That we just, you know, everything we do is a diversion. You're reading a book, or you're watching, or you're this or that. You're not spending time with yourself. Sometimes you're escaping. And that really is an interesting phenomenon. That to know that, that was part of the Makkah of Choshech. That the Mitzrayim was so wrapped up in their material possessions, as the archaeologists have proved to us, that the Choshech, where you're totally on your own and you're without, you're disconnected from material possessions, that for them is a form of torture. Okay, let's press on. The next idea I saw, an interesting question in the Chashukei Chemed. The Chashukei Chemed of Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, the famous Posek in Bnei Brak, the brother-in-law of Chaim Kanievsky, one of the sons-in-law of Rabbi Yashiv, he was asked an interesting question. This is the Chashukei Chemed on Erev in Daf Mem Vav Omed Beis. He was asked a question by a person who was a very honest person. He didn't do things as a facade with any external guises. But Madrega Shein Machzik Bohem, he wouldn't pretend to be something he wasn't. Shoel HaYehudi. So this Jew asked Reb Zilberstein, Ani Yoshev Mispala Min HaSidu Kol Tefillah. I daven with a siddur. V'chas v'shalom eini medabe b'em satfila. I don't talk during davening. Elisha ani margish sheyelod ha'inu makablim dugmas ishis mitfilasi. I'm worried that my children, when they see me davening, they don't see any passion in my tefillah. They don't see me gesticulating or saying any words out loud or closing my eyes in deep concentration. Ha'im roi lasus tenuas chitonius kidu ani mispal b'kavona. Should I make any outward gestures to demonstrate that I'm davening with kavana, despite the fact that I'm not actually on that madrega, I'm not really on that level of tefillah. Maybe my kids will see it, living a good example from my behavior. Perhaps, maybe it's sheker, maybe it's I'm not holding by this madrega. This is shelo lishma. Maybe I shouldn't do it. So says this honest Jew, to Reb Zilberstein, I want to demonstrate to my kids what proper tefillah is, but I'm not holding on that. I'm not on that level. And therefore, for me to artificially gesticulate, close my eyes, you know, say certain words out loud, it's not who I am. On the other hand, maybe it's good for them. So he answers something very interesting. First of all, he quotes a similar question that was put to Reb Shlomka of Zvil. Reb Shlomka of Zvil was one of the Zvila Rebbes, one of the, you know, the famous ones just after the war. And he was asked a question, a similar question. A man, every morning, had before he went to shul, he would sit and read the paper and have a drink. And then his children were getting a bit old. And he thought, from a chinuch point of view, they would come downstairs, they'd see the father reading the paper before they went to shul. It's not very good chinuch. He wanted to know from Shlomka, should he open a Musa Sefer? Even though he wasn't really interested in learning Musa, he wanted just to read the paper. But on the other hand, for chinuch, maybe this is better to show this is the way to behave. So interestingly, Reb Shlomka of Zvil said, listen to what he says, Omnom, it might not be lishma when it comes to your learning Musa, but when it comes to teaching, when it comes to chinuch, ze lishma b'chinuch ha'yelodim. This is acting lishma when it comes to the chinuch of your children. So therefore, he suggests you do it. And now listen to this. Then Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein adds, Ubenoisef, lokach yesh loyma, shegam im oise maisim sheko eise ne machzik bohem. Even if you do things, and you're not up to that level, but externally you go ahead and go through the process, ach la'at ze yishtarish ben liboy, it will somehow penetrate into your very heart. V'yagia l'madrega zu, and you will get to that madriga. Like the chinuch writes in mitzvah tezayin. What's that talking about? That is the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And that is in this week's parasha. What is that talking about? There's a famous chinuch. Probably one of the most famous chinuchs in the whole of his sefer. The chinuch is, of course, a sefer written as a present from a father to a son who is becoming bar mitzvah. Where he goes through and he says, listen, my dear son, you're becoming bar mitzvah. You're taking upon yourself the old mitzvahs. Let me explain to you what mitzvahs are. And he goes through all 613 mitzvahs, explaining the rationale, the reasons behind them, suggested reasons, and giving the details of each mitzvah. So in mitzvah number 16, early on, Parshas Boy Mitzvah Tez Zayin, Sheloi Lishper Etzem La Pesach. There is a mitzvah, you can't break a bone of the Korban Pesach. It has to be roasted whole. What's the idea? Why can't you break a bone of the Korban Pesach? Says the Chinuch. Mishar Sheha Mitzvah. Lizkar Nisei Mitzrayim, to remember the miracles of Egypt. V'gam, she'ein kvoid l'bnei melachim, it's not appropriate, it's not refined behavior for bnei melachim, for a priestly nation, Klal Yisrael, l'garer ha'atzomas l'sham k'klovim, to eat the bones and to break them like dogs, to ravenously eat. V'alkein, b'tchilas boyanu liyos gulas kol ha'amim. We're now at the very outset of our nationhood. We're now becoming to be an am sugula. We've got to behave in a way which is like B'nai Melachim. By acting in that way, that will generate and that will help us aspire to actually be worthy of that Madrega. Now listen to this, second paragraph of the Chinuch. Bina Shmazu. Listen very carefully and understand this. I'm going to teach you something very important. Da. This is the key words. Ki ha'odom nifal kafi pulosav. A person is fashioned according to his actions. The libay and his heart. V'chol machshavos of tomid achamaisav shehu oisavayim. You are drawn after the way you behave, after the way you act, in tovim right, for good or bad. Afid a rosh of gomor, says the chinuch. Even a wicked person. And he's got evil intentions, he's an evil person. If a person suddenly changes his ways and starts going through the motions, that will kickstart the neshama to behave in that way. Even if it's not l'shem shemayim. Etc. Because after a person's action, the heart is drawn. I'm not an expert, but I understand there are two schools of psychology. One is that you sort of work at the root of the problem, and then hopefully, when you deal with that, that will affect the outward actions. But the alternative way, and I think the preferred way nowadays, is where you actually change your behavior, and that will change your feelings and the way you think and the way you act. And therefore, that's exactly what the chinuch is saying. So therefore, this famous chinuch, that Adam Nifal Kapipu Loisov is telling us that you behave in a way which is elevated and refined, and that will actually change the inner person. And that's why, says the Chinuch, the Gemara says, the famous Gemara at the end of Marcus, Rotza Mokum Lezakis Israel Lefichach Hirbolam Tero Mitzvahs. Why? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us so many? Give us 5, give us 10, give us 20. Why 613? The answer is, Kedelis Lahatfis Bohen Kol Machshavisenu, because it's 24/7. We're constantly doing mitzvahs because those outward external activities fashions how we think and how we behave. To give us a good end. And therefore, says Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, that although you are worried that it's not quite the madrega you're up to, and you're reluctant to sort of gesticulate when you daven and to shakel or to whatever it may be, but if that you're doing it to inspire your children, ultimately, it will have an impact on you, and your tefillah will be better. You know, often in the base medrash, I tell the boys that I'm teaching, you know, they're slouching when they're learning, they're sitting back and they're holding their Gemara. I say to them, you know, if you sit like that, you'll learn like that. But if you sit forward and you pump the desk a little bit and you shackle and you shat, even though you're not into it right now, but going through the motions will sort of kickstart the neshama and it will kickstart the actual inner feelings for it. That's this chinuch, that's exactly what it's saying. And therefore, the advice of the Chashuk Echemed was to do it and to go for it. Now, let's do one quick final idea. Also a fabulous idea, also something I saw in the writings of Rabbi Daniel Fine, my wonderful colleague in the base. This is what he says. At the end of Parshas Bo, you have the Parsha of Tefillin. A very strange word. Totofos, what does that mean? They should be, we should put a tefillin shalyad on our hand, which in Chazal Terex means at the top of the head, between the eyes, on the top of the head. Where does the word teitofes come from? What is it? Says Rashi. The teitofes is tefillin. Why is it called teitofes? Baal shem shem arbo batim kriyim teitofes, because there are four sections to the tefillin shal rosh, there are four compartments. Why? What is teitofes? Says Rashi, tat bekaspi shtayim. Two, in this language, kaspi is two, and pas, afriki is shtayim, and pas in Afrikaans is two. So teitofes is 2 plus 2, that gives you 4. What a strange thing. Since when do we use bizarre foreign languages to describe tefillin? Why? Says Rabbi Fine, beautiful pshat. Chazal tell us that the roles of the Tefillin Shalyad and the Shal Rosh are very different. There's lots of discussion about this. Tefillin Shalyad, some say, symbolizes action. Tefillin Shal Rosh symbolizes thought. There should be a consistency. That's why you shouldn't speak between the Tefillin Shalyad and Tefillin Shal Rosh, because there has to be a synthesis between actions and thought. Fine. There's another symbolism. That is, that the Tefillin Shalyad represents a private witness, a private symbolism of the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why we always cover the Tefillin Shel Yad. We make sure that the sleeve goes over the Tefillin Shel Yad. It should be covered because it represents a private witness to our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Tefillin Shel Rosh, however, is a public demonstration. The what? That we are Kodesh Baruch Hu's people. In fact, the Gemara says in Brachos and in many places, V'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz kishem Hashem nikra lecho, v'yirum mecho, says the Gemara in many places, V'tanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Eilu Tefillin Shel Rosh. When it comes to this idea of Ra'u kol amei ha'aretz kishem Hashem nikra lecho, that is a reference to Tefillin Shel Rosh. Why? Says that is exactly what we're trying to achieve. It's a public demonstration that we are Hashem's chosen people. And therefore, the expression to describe the Tefillin Shel Rosh is dafka, obscure foreign languages. Tat, as Rashi says, bekaspi ishtayim, paspa friki ishtayim. We dafka use in describing the Tefillin Shel Rosh bizarre foreign languages to demonstrate the role of the Tefillin Shel Rosh, the symbolism of the Tefillin Shel Rosh, namely that it's a public sort of outward demonstration that we are the chosen people, which is also what the Ramban, in the famous Ramban at the end of the parasha, at the very end, that's really what he's saying. That is the role of Tefillin. So a very beautiful explanation of that Rashi of Tosafos. So what have we got? Five ideas we shared this evening. Number one, a Hosafa from last week, namely that when it says Orov, even though Orov in last week's parasha, He'orov, Rabbeinu Bachai said, because why He'orov, the only one with a hey, a definitive hey? The answer is because it's not a new Bria. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, he just pulled together all the different animals. So what about Arbe? Ha'arbe should be the same. It wasn't a new creation. Perhaps the Teretz is because qualitatively the Arbe in this week's parasha, that they were qualitatively different, that there was nothing like them before or afters, as we said. Then we said that amazing idea of David Cohen, the Chevron Rosh Hashiva, that the Arba didn't follow instructions. They were told, Vayechel es kol esef aretz. But in action, what did they do? They ate the esef aretz, ve'es kol priyo etz. Says of David Cohen, amazingly, that we know the Maharal says there is a correlation of the 10 makas with the 10 mamoras. The maima, which represents the maka of Arba, is that tadshe aretz. But the Torah in Perek Aleph tells us that the trees didn't listen when the land produced the tree. It was meant to be, as the Pasuk says, Eitz Pri Oisa Pri, that the Eitz itself should be like a pri. But it didn't. And therefore, in the same way that it didn't follow the initial instructions in the original one of the Ten Mamoras, or so too in the Makkah that corresponds to that Makkah, it also didn't follow instructions. Fabulous insights. Then we saw that the idea of Rabbi Rabinowitz, that the Makkah of Choshech, why was it so devastatingly hard? The answer is because the ancient Egyptians, they measured their worth by their material possessions. They were buried in tombs with their wealth. So to disconnect them from it is totally unsettling and is torture. And that was the idea behind it in Rabbi Twersky in the spa retreat. Then the idea of the Korban Pesach, that interesting question given to Rabbi Yisrael Zilberstein, how come should a person when he davens sort of over gesticulate in order to sort of inspire his children to do so? He's not yet by the Madrega. The answer is, he says, quoting Shlemko of Zvil, that man would learn a Musaf, have this Musaf open in those few moments before he goes to Shacharis. When the children come down, they see that rather than reading the paper, even though that was learning Shelo Lishma, it's Chinuch Lishma. And the outward action can somehow generate that inner feeling. And therefore, he advised the man to do so. And that is really, says the Chinuch, the message of the Korban Pesach. We eat it in a refined way. We don't break the bones because that outward action will generate and remind us and help us become the Am Segula. Odom Nifal Kafi Pu'loisof. And lastly, the idea of Tefillin, the two different roles of Tefillin Shel Yad, Tefillin Shel Rosh, to explain that strange Rashi of why the Torah describes it as Tetophis, using a combination of different languages, bizarre foreign languages, the idea being that the Tefillin Shel Yad represents the private connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Tefillin Shel Rosh represents the sort of the public role of Klal Yisrael, and therefore in the description of these particular Tefillin, we use these bizarre, strange, unusual foreign languages. Thank you very much for listening. I wish you a very good evening and a very good Shabbos.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.